Green Bay.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
Sometimes I just cannot believe it.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. The Wagner Military Group says it's captured the entire Ukrainian city of Bakhmut. It's been the scene of brutal fighting, but Ukraine denies this claim. Meanwhile, ABC's Tom Sufi Burridge in Ukraine says there's been a big boost to momentum after news the U.S. will supply Ukraine with F-16 fighter jets.
It's almost certain those jets will not arrive in time for a much bigger Ukrainian offensive promised soon. Pilots need training, there's logistics, so it will probably take months for them to arrive. But control of the skies overhead is crucial for Ukraine's long-term security, a senior Russian official warning of, quote, colossal risks if the West supplies Ukraine with F-16s.
Ukrainian President Zelensky is at the G7 in Japan, where he's met with world leaders. He could meet with President Biden. The U.S. could default as soon as June 1st if no deal's reached to raise the debt ceiling. Talks continued Friday. Republicans halted them before resuming Friday night. Republicans want spending cuts. This is ABC News. The Air National Guardsman charged with leaking defense secrets is back behind bars after a bail hearing Friday. ABC's Eric Katursky has details from Massachusetts.
A federal judge denying bail, saying the list of people Jack Teixeira put at risk was as long as a phone book. The judge agreeing with federal prosecutors that Teixeira, if released, could be convinced to reveal sensitive information to the nation's enemies. I understand it smacks of a spy novel, the judge said, but he added foreign countries know this defendant was disloyal to the United States.
Heading into Memorial Day weekend, there's concern about unruly passengers in Atlanta, says ABC's Phil Lipoff.
The situation is so intense that the airport general manager went before Atlanta city officials to discuss safety and money for extra security.
We have seen an increase in this type of behavior in Atlanta Airport and across the industry.
And reps for Hartsfield-Jackson Airport telling ABC News in a statement, ATL's top priority is to provide a safe and efficient operation.
Brian Clark, ABC News.
Hey, I'm Smokey Bear, and I made an assistant to help you out, because only you can prevent wildfires.
Hey, Assistant Smokey Bear, call me Papa Bear, because I'm grilling up dinner. Do you get it?
Yes. Good job.
So, what should I do with all these coals?
Don't just toss them out. Put them in a metal container because those embers can start a wildfire.
I understand. The stakes are high.
Ha, 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 ha.
Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
If I could be you.
And you could be me.
For just 1 hour.
If you could find a way.
To get inside.
Each other's mind.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
We've all felt left out. And for some, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Looking for more local programming? Check out our website, civicmedia.us, to see our entire lineup.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Two American banks collapsed in the past week. As Eric Tegedoff reports, some consumers are considering alternatives like credit unions.
Troy Stang is head of the Go West Credit Union Association, which represents more than 300 credit unions in Oregon and five other states. He says tumult in the financial market historically generates interest in the local structure of credit unions.
Whether it was with the dot-com bust, whether it was with the activities that led up to the Great Recession, consumers at their kitchen tables started having these conversations more intentionally about who is it that we do our financial services with.
Silicon Valley Bank's collapse is the second largest bank collapse in U.S. history. To get depositors their money, the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation has stepped in. Stang notes that National Share Insurance Fund, administered by the National Credit Union Administration, is the equivalent regulator for his institutions and is paid for by the credit union system. Stang says credit unions are not-for-profit and member-owned.
We're not accountable to Wall Street investors. We're not accountable to other forces outside of our membership. And so it's a much different model.
Stang says many of the credit unions in his association have spent the last week reassuring customers and noting differences in their institution structure from others. He adds a strong financial system is important for consumers, regardless of which institution they bank with. I'm Eric Tegedoff. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
And this is Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
The Talk of Green Bay, 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW programming is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios.
Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
Sometimes I just cannot believe all the storms we've gone through here.
I can only hope that we'll be able to leave this house to you one day, baby. You're our legacy.
Planning for these disasters will make sure we're safe, and is the best way to protect that legacy.
Protect your legacy. Visit ready.gov/plan for the tools and tips you need to start your emergency preparedness plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Thing. Sharp Cheddar Weekends is...
Hey, this is Jim Santel. I am...
Welcome. Grab your favorite morning beverage and join us for Morning Cannolis with Jim Santel. Sampling the news desserts of the week, here is your host, Jim Santel.
And welcome to this, our second hour. It is Saturday, May 20th, 2023. This is our weekly review, our analysis, our discussion, our exploration of the most important news events, stories in the area of government and law and the aspiration for justice in America. Spending a lot of time in the first hour of our time together this morning, talking, as we have before, about our United States Supreme Court. A couple of major opinions issued by the Supreme Court just this past week affecting internet liability and also intellectual property. Not insignificant issues at all. We look forward to the Supreme Court in the weeks just ahead, issuing more opinions of great gravity, some of which we've talked about in the fall and of last year and also in the early weeks of this year. We'll be spending a lot of time in the month of June analyzing those cases as they come forward. And specifically on our 50th show coming up in just a couple of weeks, that is on Saturday, June 3rd, we're going to be not only observing our one-year anniversary on the air, but spending that time talking about these major cases coming out of the Supreme Court that are going forward to change who we are, define who we are as a nation, undeniably continuing to define our Constitution and the ways in which we understand it in 2023 and beyond. So stay with us for all of those future broadcasts as well. Again, here on the broadcast stations of Civic Media throughout our great state of Wisconsin. My name is Jim Santel. I'm with you this morning, coming from the studios of WAUK Radio in downtown Waukesha. I am joined in the studio by my other ever faithful and incredibly attentive and productive producer. Her name is Anya. And together we're taking your phone calls at 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789, as we continue this morning to talk about the United States Supreme Court. Bring us your questions, your comments, your thoughts, your observations. A couple of very good callers in our first hour commenting upon issues not only that we've discussed, but also we're going to discuss in the future, including the debt ceiling issue, and also down the road, perhaps not today, but down the road, talking about the First Amendment, the intersection of that, and the capacity of superintendents and of school districts, school boards, to restrict under the First Amendment access to books and other materials, even music, here in the school district of Waukesha, other places around the nation. As we continue to talk about the United States Supreme Court, a couple of other things happened this past week coming out of that high court that begins to define its docket, not for this term, but believe it or not, for the 2023-2024 four term, a term that begins on October 1 of this year. Again, these cases, the court beginning to populate its docket so that the parties know that in the next term, the next year, it's going to be taking up these cases. Both of these matters coming out of the Supreme Court this year, incredibly significant because of the importance, once again, on our lives and our livelihoods. One of them having to do, once again, with voting rights, voting in America, and in particular, gerrymandering. The Supreme Court, just on Monday of this week, said that it would decide, again, down the road, not this term, not in May or June of this year, but whether a congressional voting district in the state of South Carolina is where this case comes from, should be restored after a lower federal court struck it down as an unconstitutional racial gerrymander. A three-judge panel of the Federal District Court in Columbia, South Carolina, had ruled way back in January that the state's first congressional district, you can go online and find what that congressional district looks like. It was drawn, as our lines were drawn here in Wisconsin, after the 2020 census. They found, that three-judge panel, that particular congressional district violated the Constitution by making race the predominant factor in drawing those lines. That district, which was anchored in Charleston, had elected a Republican every year since 1980, with the exception of 2018. But it appears that the 2020 race, according to the filings and the representation of this to the lower court, was fairly close, with less than a 1 percentage point separating the candidates in that 2020 election. And the allegation was that the Republican lawmakers, in redrawing the lines, had sought to create a stronger Republican tilt, that language from the very words of the briefs filed with the court in that 2020 census result. And that's what the panel wrote coming out of that district court decision. The lawmakers achieved that goal, the panel also said, by the so-called, and this is their language, the bleaching of African-American voters out of the Charleston County portion of Congressional District Number 1. The new House map moved about 62% of black voters in Charleston County from the 1st district to the 6th district, and that was the seat that Representative Jim Clyburn, a black Democrat, has held for 30 years. Jim Clyburn, one of the most important players in American politics and American government to this day. He continues to be a leader in the House of Representatives, very important person. This involves his district and generally the issue of racial gerrymandering. The Supreme Court this past week on Monday said that it will take a look at this case. It will take a determination about whether or not the lower court was right in finding this was a racial gerrymandering. The case called Alexander versus South Carolina State Conference of the NAACP. The challenge again to the decisions made by the state legislature there to redraw these lines in the wake of the 2020 census. Now, you may recall that the Supreme Court right now has another case pending before it coming out of Alabama. It sounds an awful lot like this case. The court will sometime, probably in the next 4, 5, 6 weeks, maybe next week, we never know, actually decide the Alabama case. And there, too, the allegation was that a congressional map that was drawn by Republican lawmakers in Alabama, that violated fundamental notions under the Voting Rights Act, and had once again diluted the capacity of black voters to be represented in the United States Congress. This South Carolina case poses some different legal questions, same kind of concept generally, but this one is centered on the Constitution's equal protection principles. We've already made reference to them in our first hour. Under the 14th Amendment, other provisions of our Constitution, different principles, different case, one coming out of Alabama, pending right now. We'll get that decision soon. This other case coming out of South Carolina, Supreme Court also interested in it, going to review that and presumably decide that case down the road. We'll look forward to that decision probably next year, 2024, at this time. And we know that there's yet a third case pending before the Supreme Court, also on voting. It comes out of North Carolina. The same kinds of allegations. Fascinating case there because it raises this issue of whether or not this independent state legislature doctrine is valid. It is an off-the-wall fringe doctrine, but the Supreme Court is looking at it, perhaps not too much longer. The North Carolina Supreme Court recently reconstituted after a vote in that state that reconstituted the makeup, the political makeup, if you will, of the Supreme Court. They reversed the very decision upon which the previous appeal had been taken, and therefore highly likely the Supreme Court will send this entire matter from North Carolina back to the lower courts and not decide this independent state legislature doctrine. They've got that pending before them right now. The point of all of this is the Supreme Court continues to be very, very focused, as we should all be, on voting rights in America. We have this Alabama case coming up under the Voting Rights Act. We've got the South Carolina case coming up under the Constitution's equal protection principles. North Carolina also being looked at to determine whether or not people of color in America are disenfranchised by virtue of the decisions made by legislatures to draw lines in the way that they're doing this. We'll take a look at those cases as they're decided this year and next. The Supreme Court announcing it continues to be very focused and interested in voting rights in America, as it should be, underscoring also the importance of our legislature to address these issues as well as they identify problems in ensuring that everyone in America entitled to vote has that capacity and that right to vote. Something else happened this past week, perhaps not quite as important in the broad scope of things, but another case the Supreme Court said it will take up in the next term, and this case, yes, involves the former President Donald Trump. The justices announced again on Monday that they will, in the next term, take another case deciding whether individual members of Congress, a sitting member, a group of members of Congress, are entitled to sue a government agency for information, to get information, documents, materials from that agency about a Washington hotel that was previously owned by President Donald Trump. You recall this well. It's the old post office building, just a couple of blocks from the White House, right across from the Treasury building on Pennsylvania Avenue. Former president, before he became president, through the Trump Organization, had leased that property from the General Services Administration. That's the agency that maintains the property, and had turned that into a hotel. And during the course of the presidency of Donald Trump, many members of Congress had asked for information about, through its Oversight and Reform Committee of the House of Representatives, asked for information about the arrangements for that holding by the former president of this property, this lease holding for the Trump International Hotel. Lease facility, it's the old post office way back in 2013. The lease had said that no elected official of the government of the United States shall be admitted to any share or part of this lease or any benefits that may arise therefrom. And that's the basis upon which these House of Representative members had asked for information about the basis for a sitting president still having this property ownership in the hotel there in Washington, D.C. And the Supreme Court has determined that in its next term, even though, again, the property is no longer leased to the former president, the Supreme Court has determined that in its next term, it will address this issue, this important issue about whether sitting members of Congress through this committee can, in fact, request of an agency this kind of information. It's a 1928 law that empowers 7 members of the House Oversight Committee to obtain this information. The Supreme Court going to be telling us whether or not they have that authority, even though the issue sounds a bit moot, certainly important for future presidencies, for future Congresses, if indeed we have the same implications with respect to ethics issues and the presence of a president who continues to hold properties contrary to the law. We'll see what the Supreme Court does with that, not this year, but next year. Right after the break, we're talking more about the Supreme Court and, yes, taking some callers right after this break on Morning Cannolis. Stay with us for that important discussion.
U.S. Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the lingo.
Jelly. Jelly adjective. Jelly is a shorter, better way to say jealous. As in, Chloe, I am like so jelly of your unicorn phone case.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org, brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
When you're high, you feel different. You think different, you talk different, you draw different, you listen to music different, but you probably knew that. Problem is, you also drive different, and not in a good way. That's why driving high is illegal everywhere. So if you're high, just don't drive. Make a plan to get a sober ride. Because if you feel different, you drive different. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Don't let biased algorithms, or degree screens, or exclusive professional networks, or stereotypes. Don't let anything keep you from discovering the half of the workforce who are stars. Workers skilled through alternative routes rather than a bachelor's degree. It's time to tear the paper ceiling and see the stars beyond it. Find out how you can make stars part of your talent strategy at tearthepaperceiling.org. Brought to you by Opportunity at Work and the Ad Council.
Here's your updated forecast. Ample sunshine expected this afternoon with a high of 71. Northwesterly winds 8 to 15 miles an hour. Lows dip down to about 50 tonight. A mix of clouds and sun. Tomorrow, high temperatures reach up to 73. Low 70s Monday, turning warmer on Tuesday with highs in the upper 70s. Once again, high of 71 this afternoon. Lows level off around 50 tonight. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Ray Miller. Right now, it's 63.
This is Civic Media for the Fox Valley.
And we're back here on this next segment of Morning Cannolis. Before we turn to some of our callers calling in with questions, comments, which we appreciate and value tremendously, one more footnote to the Supreme Court. And this coming out not from the Supreme Court itself this past week, but rather from the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals. The Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals in the southern part of our nation, this court below the Supreme Court and above district courts, including a district court judge in the Northern District of Texas. You may recall the decision made by a district court judge not too long ago, several weeks ago, Judge Matthew Kaczmarek, that had concluded that U.S. Food and Drug Administration had broken the law, had failed to follow the proper procedures in how it approved the drug called mifepristone more than two decades ago. This very important drug, commissioned by, approved by, after an awful lot of analysis and testing, science, facts, all those kinds of things, finding by the FDA that it is relatively safe. It is secure for people to use this drug, for doctors to prescribe it, not only in connection with abortion treatment, but also in connection with miscarriages. Very important drug out there for almost a quarter century. Matthew Kaczmarek, again, a couple of months ago, finding that the FDA process was not sufficiently scientific, was not sufficiently consistent with how the FDA should do these things, and so directed that they withdraw its approval. That is, they being the FDA, withdraw approval for the continued use of the drug. Huge issue. Again, the most significant thing probably that has happened since June of last year when the United States Supreme Court withdrew and rescinded the opinion in Roe versus Wade. Since 1973, nearly 50 years of acknowledging the privacy right to an abortion, substituting in Dobbs versus Reproductive Service this notion that the Supreme Court articulated through, again, the majority of the court, that the Constitution of the United States of America does not, in fact, establish a privacy right to abortion in its terms, in its sense. We get this issue related to mifepristone coming up in the wake of that. Why do I raise it once again? Not because it's before the Supreme Court this past week, because you may recall the Supreme Court sent this matter back down to the appeals court after having reviewed it briefly, again, a number of months ago, sending it back to the appeals court, saying it's not ready for us to review, and directing the appeals court, the United States Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit, which, yes, includes this Northern District Court, to review this entire matter. What happened this past week that is so significant in the wake of that action by the United States Supreme Court? A three-judge panel, and that's the way they work, three-judge panels, review then cases coming up from lower courts. A three-judge panel entertains oral argument from the parties this past week about what it should do. Should it uphold Judge Kaczmarek's decision that the FDA acted improperly in authorizing this drug nearly a quarter century ago? Or should it nonetheless, on the other side, adopt the FDA's position, a position articulated by the attorneys for your government through the United States Department of Justice, that the FDA process is proper? It was subject to multiple testing, appropriately done over the period of many, many years, should not be reviewed by a district court that expresses this kind of skepticism with respect to the science and the facts established by the Food and Drug Administration in support of the use of mifepristone. What comes out of this oral argument, and why is this news? Because it heralds almost certainly what the Fifth Circuit is probably going to do in its resolution of this case now before it. Roughly 2 hours of oral argument this past week in front of this three-judge panel. The three-judge panel, a part of the Fifth Circuit, by anyone's measure, the Fifth Circuit, one of the more conservative, if not the most conservative panels in the entire country, the Ninth Circuit perhaps being one of the most liberal, others around the country at various stages in between those, they heard about 2 hours of oral argument in what can only be regarded this very landmark abortion pill case. And the upshot is that the three-judge panel, the judges there, were not buying. They were not approving what the Biden administration's arguments were, what the FDA's arguments were for why the courts should not second-guess how the government, how the FDA has regulated this medication abortion drug. So the judges of this panel quizzing the attorneys for both sides, but especially the attorneys from the government, from the Department of Justice, for the FDA, questioning very, very closely whether or not the FDA acted properly in authorizing the use of this drug. So we have, for example, Circuit Judge James Ho, appointed by Donald Trump, showing a fair amount of hostility to the idea of giving any FDA deference right from the beginning of the hearing. He interrupted the attorney for the FDA and said, questioned why the department was describing Kaczmarek's opinion as unprecedented. Well, she was doing that because, in fact, it was. It was the first time in our nation's history that a district court judge had ruled that an FDA decision like this should be overturned, substituting his view for that of science and facts. The judge, Judge Ho, went on to say, I'm just wondering, why not focus on the facts of this case rather than have this sort of FDA can do no wrong theme? He later suggested that it was not a very pro-science, pro-information, pro-intellectual curiosity position for the FDA to reduce some of the reporting requirements for when the drug had adverse effects, while also relaxing some of the requirements for its distribution. Went back to this theme that he was articulating, that it seemed to be the government was saying the FDA can do no wrong, and went on to say, we are allowed to look at the FDA just like we're looking at any other agency. So all of the judges on that panel during the course of this two-hour oral argument expressing considerable doubt about whether or not the FDA's position should be upheld, and suggesting to the attorneys representing the government and, yes, the United States of America, that this deference that has properly been shown for all agencies should not, in fact, be seen here. When we come back, I'm going to talk a little bit more about the consequences of an unfavorable ruling, likely coming from the Fifth Circuit in the wake of this oral argument sometime soon, not only for the abortion issue, but also for other pharmaceutical drugs down the road. Stay with us for that conversation and also some calls, some comments, some questions from folks coming in to our conversation this morning on Morning Cannolis. Everybody agrees.
Keeping the Fox Valley connected, informed, and entertained. This is Civic Media.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. The Wagner Military Group says it's captured the entire Ukrainian city of Bakhmut. It's been the scene of brutal fighting, but Ukraine denies this claim. Meanwhile, ABC's Tom Sufi Burridge in Ukraine says there's been a big boost to momentum after news the U.S. will supply Ukraine with F-16 fighter jets.
It's almost certain those jets will not arrive in time for a much bigger Ukrainian offensive promised soon. Pilots need training, there's logistics, so it will probably take months for them to arrive. But control of the skies overhead is crucial for Ukraine's long-term security, a senior Russian official warning of, quote, colossal risks if the West supplies Ukraine with F-16s.
Ukrainian President Zelensky is at the G7 in Japan, where he's met with world leaders. He could meet with President Biden. The U.S. could default as soon as June 1st if no deal's reached to raise the debt ceiling. Talks continued Friday. Republicans halted them before resuming Friday night. Republicans want spending cuts. This is ABC News.
Civic Media radio stations providing your news, conversations, and fun you won't find anywhere else.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Matnair. Here's what you need to know. Kia and Hyundai have agreed to settle a $200 million lawsuit related to the explosion in car thefts in Milwaukee and around the country. In a statement, the companies say they'll provide cash compensation for customers who incurred theft-related vehicle losses or damage not covered by insurance. The cars were easy to steal because of a design flaw. Wisconsin Attorney General Josh Call joining a bipartisan group of 39 lawmakers urging Congress to pass the Combating Illicit Xylazine Act. This comes after a surge in overdose deaths nationwide related to xylazine. It's a potent veterinary medication that has been widely mixed with opioids like fentanyl and is easy to get online. Xylazine, only approved by the FDA as a veterinary medicine used to sedate and relieve pain in large animals. I'm Jane Matnair. This is Civic Media News.
Smell that? That's the smell of carefully crafted coffee being poured into your cup with natural notes you can truly taste and freshness you can count on. The High Lift is the only standalone late-day coffee shop in Two Rivers, offering local bakery items with spacious lawn and outdoor seating. The High Lift takes time to weigh out their ingredients, so every sip is perfect. The High Lift, 1207 Madison Street in Two Rivers, and on Facebook.
The RPG came through the belly of the aircraft. We don't talk about the female combat wounded. These are our daughters and our sisters and our mothers. Wounded Warrior Project came into my life and taught me how to stand back up and get back in the fight.
The truth is, I think we all have this strength inside of us, but until you're tested, you just don't know what's there.
See how Wounded Warrior Project empowers women veterans like Beth by visiting woundedwarriorproject.org/empowerwomenvets.
What I know about courage, I learned from my adoptive mom. She said sometimes you just gotta hold on and know we'll get through this.
Mom, we are so high up. Hold my hand.
No, you hold my hand.
Here we go.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more. This message is brought to you by AdoptUSKids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
You know him as the nose tackle for the green and gold.
1993 to 1999, and again 2001 to 2003.
125 games, 292 tackles, 7 sacks, and a Super Bowl ring. But there's more to life than stats, and there's more to life than football.
You're about to find out.
Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, featuring Packers legend Gilbert Brown.
Monday mornings at 8 on WISS and WGBW and on the Civic Media app.
Continuing to join us this morning as we talk about things related to the Supreme Court. And before the break, this very significant, troubling discussion by three judges of the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals determining whether or not this prior decision of Judge Kaczmarek out of the Northern District of Texas telling the FDA that it had improperly authorized mifepristone, this abortion pill, this pill, this medication properly authorized for nearly a quarter of a century that also addresses miscarriage situations, determined by the FDA to be safe and secure, science, facts, and now the Fifth Circuit, almost certainly based upon the oral argument of this past week, great skepticism about what the FDA did here, quizzing the government attorneys about whether or not this deference to the FDA should be embedded in the law there in the Fifth Circuit and beyond. can't say for sure. We do not know with great certainty what the Fifth Circuit will do with this, but highly likely that sometime soon we'll be talking on this broadcast and you'll be hearing throughout the nation about this very important case coming out of now the Fifth Circuit, probably finding, supporting the decision by Judge Kaczmarek that mifepristone can no longer be a part of our national prescriptive medical response to serious and important medical issues. Why is this important? Well, two things. Plainly, if that in fact happens, if the Court of Appeals from the Fifth Circuit makes that determination, headed back to the Supreme Court. That will not be the final word coming out of the Fifth Circuit. That is the good news coming out of what will probably happen from that appellate court. But the Supreme Court will then have to wrestle with this issue in earnest. It did not do that the first time. Basically said, not ready for us to resolve this. Go back and take a closer look at this. Now the Supreme Court will have to determine in the wake of its decision in Dobbs whether or not this kind of thing, prohibiting a form of access to abortion, is also legal in the state of Texas, certainly, but around the country, has implications for every state in the union where abortion is legal and illegal, and a significant issue for in that area in itself with respect to privacy rights and reproductive rights. No less significant is the impact of this kind of ruling upon other pharmaceuticals that are out there. I suspect many of you on a routine basis or irregular basis have gotten prescription drugs from your doctor, your healthcare provider. All of those have been authorized by the FDA, again, based upon testing and results of medical analysis, experts coming forward and saying, yes, not without side effects, but the benefits of this particular drug in many, many areas, not just abortion, not just miscarriage situations, many, many areas, these drugs are safe and secure. Let us administer these to patients as a part of our healthcare provision. If this concept that a federal district court judge and appeals courts can substitute its view based upon its analysis, contrary to what the FDA has done, I would offer, and this is the reason why this is so important, as we always ask, that it threatens the possibility, raises the possibility, the specter, that other judges down the road with respect to other drugs could likewise come forward again for a second time in our nation's history and say, you know what? I don't like what the FDA did in the case of this drug related to Alzheimer's or heart disease or emphysema or other things that are prescribed drugs established by the FDA as being safe and secure, and therefore I'm going to direct the FDA to withdraw those from the market as well. I would offer to you that rule of law decision, if we go down that road, that supposedly justice-based decision is not justice-based, it's not premised upon the facts, and would accomplish in the courts what our FDA has done so very well, certainly imperfectly. The FDA gets criticized all the time for not being fast enough, right, in approving drugs, but it does so based upon the science. The judiciary here should not be involved in these kinds of things. We'll see what the Supreme Court does, likely after the Fifth Circuit makes this decision, almost certainly to support the lower court, finding that mifepristone should not be out there. FDA's approval of this should be withdrawn. Arguably cataclysmic, again, in our nation in the wake of what the Supreme Court did with respect to abortion rights last June. We appreciate our callers so very much. They've been waiting online for a while here. Let's take some of our callers, some of these issues and others here in Morning Cannolis. Dan from Monona, you've been waiting for a while. Dan, glad to have you with us this morning. Your comment or question?
I got a question for you about off topic from the Supreme Court, but watching the fake whistleblower hearings.
Yes, right. Jim Jordan, right?
Exactly. What do you do? I mean, it seems like they find new ways to break rules. What do you do when the chairman of the committee doesn't follow the rules of the committee?
That is a tough question, right? So this comes up, again, in connection with, to put some context, Dan, appreciate the bringing this to our attention as well. This is a part of the majority's decision as a part of its taking over the power in the House of Representatives. Jim Jordan, the head of this committee, investigating whether or not in government generally, certainly executive branch, and in the FBI in particular, there has been this hostility expressed toward so-called conservative positions and an inappropriate partisan approach approach to things. So Jim Jordan has one of a series of hearings this past week, bringing forward some former terminated FBI agents to talk about, supposedly as whistleblowers, about what's going on inside the FBI. A couple of comments in the wake of that very good comment about what's going on here. One of the things that another member of this committee, against a bipartisan committee, there are Democrats there, they're outnumbered by the Republicans. The Democrat asked, can we have the prior transcripts of these witnesses coming forward to testify about what they saw when they are part of the FBI? And the chair says, no, you're not entitled to them. Well, I think most people look at the rules and we don't study them carefully. Perhaps some of you have. But that is a part of the process. And that, too, I would offer, even inside of what is not the courtroom, but nonetheless, the process, the due process of an investigative public hearing in our first branch of government, the legislature, process to be given to everybody, disclosures of information that help us understand what's going on. The question is, what do we do when the chair of that committee says, nope, I'm not giving that forward? Well, certainly there are political things that can be done. You make this argument in front of the media, in front of the American population generally, and no doubt the political forces inside the House of Representatives will continue to push that. The second issue, of course, is whether or not these folks are really whistleblowers. I'll take the opportunity here to talk a little bit about that issue raised by this issue as well. These are not whistleblowers. These are folks who were terminated because of some violations of internal FBI policy and practice. They're not people who come forward who are identifying something previously unknown to the public, unknown to the government, that needs to be disclosed. In the context of whistleblowers, when I was a U.S. attorney, assistant U.S. attorney, on a fairly regular basis, we encourage people to come forward, especially those who are working inside of private industry, certainly the government as well, to disclose to us things that we do not know, to which they have access. They have specific information. Specifically, somebody comes forward and says, you know, I'm working for a healthcare provider, and my belief is that they're billing inaccuracies, purposeful billing approaches, policies, and protocols that are contrary to the way we should be doing this, using Medicare, Medicaid monies, healthcare monies. They come forward and identify that for the government to investigate and determine whether or not some remedy needs to be undertaken. Disclosing something that's not previously known. Those are whistleblowers, and there's something called the False Claims Act, other provisions of federal civil law. These are not whistleblowers. These are disgruntled former employees coming forward to describe the ways that they have been treated, also identified by the Democrats on this committee. It is unfortunate from my perspective that we label them as whistleblowers because it undermines the legitimate whistleblowers who are out there, and also that our Congress is spending time doing this as opposed to working on the great issues before us. So appreciate the call, appreciate the comment, and the observation about the need to abide by the rules, even inside a House committee. Thank you for that comment and question. Joe from Madison, also with us again this morning. Joe, glad to have you back with us once again. Welcome.
Hi. Thanks again. A really informative show, as always, Jim. Really appreciate it. I wanted to just sort of respond in a general way, because I think it may inform the discussion. It certainly did for me. You, in the previous hour, were talking about the Brown versus Board of Education Supreme Court ruling, and you talked about the Supreme Court. And I may not have the language exactly right, but I wrote it down because, to me, it was very affecting. You said the Supreme Court can change who we are, define who we are.
Yes.
And I thought that is really an interesting point, in that the Supreme Court, by Brown versus Board of Education, said that all children deserve an equal chance at education. I mean, I think that's a pretty big defining. It changes who we are, defines who we are. And in the same way, we are now looking at, we had 50 years of saying that we Americans all have privacy rights, and there are various rights that come out of that, such as the right to abortion, the right to marry, for gay people to marry, right to birth control, et cetera. And now we are in a circumstance, again, where the Supreme Court has changed, and we may change if what you were talking about previously, the right to a particular drug, the government, the Supreme Court can now just may be in a position to say, no, you can't have that. despite despite whether the FDA rules it as a safe drug, which has been, you know, prescribed for, I don't know, a couple decades at least.
23 years.
I think that language, though, yeah, it's really important, Jim, when you think about your show and what you're offering, and also when you speak at your 50th anniversary next week. It is, when you look at the Supreme Court, it changes who we are.
It
defines us in a way, in both good and bad. And I think it was an offhand comment of yours, but I think very central to pretty much all of your discussion that you have when you look at the Supreme Court. It's extremely powerful in terms of what it says, in terms of who we are as Americans, what we are aspiring to, what kind of country we want to have. So I appreciate that, Jim, and I just wanted to throw that out there as something to a thread to sort of think about as we move forward. Thanks
Absolutely.
A lot. I appreciate the discussion,
Joe, thank
course.
You so much for the comment. Again, not only the compliment about the language, but I believe that it's not original with me, I will tell you. Many people have talked about the great impact, Joe, as you've just said, of the Supreme Court on things like intellectual property, yes, indeed, and upon hotels and about congressional authorities and those kinds of things, but also about much larger issues, too. And this area of education, of course, since 1954, is among them, Joe, as you've just said. We continue to struggle with that, right? And as I said before in the opening segments of our morning discussion today, the Supreme Court had to come back and issue what's called Brown 2 and said, no, we're serious about this. Again, defining who we are and telling those areas, those school districts around the country, including not just those in the South, but in the North and the East and the West, who said, well, yeah, that's just the Supreme Court talking about those issues under the Constitution. We don't have to follow that. Supreme Court came back in this case called Brown 2 and said, no, we are the law of the land for good or for bad, Joe, as you just said, sometimes for good, sometimes also in bad areas, changing the ways that we are. In this case, in education, saying we mean what we said and we said what we mean, and you need to do this, again, remember this language, with all deliberate speed. That was Brown 2, directing worlds, places around the country, worlds of educators to do this expeditiously and sending that message to them that the Constitution requires that. It does define us. It does tell us who we are and also who we should be, right? A lot of this is aspirational, too. And, Joe, I appreciate the comment because it also presages something else we're going to talk about maybe on our 50th anniversary show, maybe before, maybe after that, depending upon when they decide this. But the Supreme Court is still wrestling with this issue because we've got this case involving the University of North Carolina and Harvard, a group coming forward and saying that when it comes to admissions to colleges and universities, again, educators, not public schools exclusively, not private schools exclusively, but all of them, that the issue of race, again, percolating up, cannot be used to determine who is entering into an entering class. Again, the intersection of race and education, a different purpose than what it was identified for in Brown versus Board of Education. Supreme Court going to talk about that again. And to Joe, your very good point, and invoking the language that I have used, that you have used, others have used, going to tell us inside education once again, what is that intersection all about? And race in America continues to be a huge, dramatic issue, does define us. How does it animate us and define us inside education? We'll talk about that in the future. Stay with us for the final segment here this morning, as we'll take at least one more caller and also talk a little bit more about the 14th Amendment as we close out this show. Stay with us for that discussion.
Smell that? That's the smell of carefully crafted coffee being poured into your cup with natural notes you can truly taste and freshness you can count on. The High Lift is the only standalone late-day coffee shop in Two Rivers, offering local bakery items with spacious lawn and outdoor seating. The High Lift takes time to weigh out their ingredients, so every sip is perfect. The High Lift, 1207 Madison Street in Two Rivers, and on Facebook.
Hi, we're the Goo Goo Dolls. We're fortunate that our daughters have what they need to grow and learn. But that isn't the case for nearly 13 million kids in the U.S. that struggle with hunger.
Childhood hunger is a heartbreaking reality that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and provides it to families and children in need.
You can help kids in need in your community by visiting feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Ready for our little forest adventure?
Yes!
We're here!
Whoa! That was fast!
There's a forest closer than you think. Find a park or forest near you and music inspired by nature at discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by USDA Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Here's your updated forecast. Ample sunshine expected this afternoon with a high of 71. Northwesterly winds 8 to 15 miles an hour. Lows dip down to about 50 tonight. A mix of clouds and sun. Tomorrow, high temperatures reach up to 73. Low 70s Monday, turning warmer on Tuesday with highs in the upper 70s. Once again, high of 71 this afternoon. Lows level off around 50 tonight. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Ray Miller. Right now, it's 63.
This is Civic Media for the Fox Valley.
And we are back for this final segment of Morning Cannolis. Wonderful callers this morning, as always. Appreciate those comments, those questions, those observations about the world in which we live. Thank you for engaging me and Anya in our discussion every Saturday morning, and keep that coming. Jean from Eau Claire, also calling in this morning. Jean, glad to have you with us as well. Your comment or question this morning?
Oh, thank you so much. As usual, I have not missed one of your two-hour sessions. This is the greatest service to our state and country. Thank you so much. I want to bring up one huge thing, I think. You know, and this all goes to ethics and rules and accountability. You know, our country was built on common hopes and reliance, you know, on common goals, dependent on honesty and integrity and fairness of the rule of law, equality and justice for all. Our love of our country, our love of mankind. We wanted things to be done appropriately and everybody by the same rules so that we at least have, you know, expectations. And this is being destroyed as we speak, and it's like really being attacked significantly. And it's coming from the inside out, and it's also coming from people who are above the law. And right now, more than anything, we need ethics and accountability by our highest people who should be thankful to be honored in the position of the Supreme Court justices. And boy, we're so blessed to have people like you who are fighting every day for our country. So thank you very much. We all need to be on the stick. We need to have our voices heard. And thank you so much for this educational time. Keep up the great work.
Jean, thank you so much for those very, very nice words. I am flattered, I am honored, and delighted to be with you and all of our listeners to talk virtually every Saturday morning about these important issues. Glad that it's informative, and appreciate, again, not only those who agree with me on some of these, I would say, not entirely controversial issues, but also those, as we have taken them as well, who agree to disagree, if you will, on some of these issues as well. That's what the First Amendment's all about, and that's what this radio program is all about, too, so encourage more of that. With respect to, Jean, your specific comments about ethics and integrity, let me pull a couple of things from that, those good comments that you just made. Public service is not a right. Right? Whether you're elected to the Congress, elected to the governor's mansion in Madison, elected to your city council, elected to your state assembly house, it is not a right. It is a privilege. It is an honor, quite literally, to be elected by your constituents who look to you and say, you are representative of me, and I want you to act on my behalf. Now, huge amount of disagreement out there goes back to the Federalist Papers about what that means in terms of actual representation and whether or not you continue to abide by exclusively what your constituents say, or whether you should be guided by your own, if you will, compass inside yourself. That's an issue that we continue to wrestle with to the good. That's all about representative democracy in America and other places on the face of the planet. The point is, when you are elected, when you are given that commission, Gene, as you were just saying, to represent people in whatever capacity it is, I would add, as you've also noted, Gene, when you are appointed by an authority, whether it is the President of the United States of America, whether it is a governor of the state of Wisconsin, other places, whether it's a local official to do something likewise, what are you doing that for? You're doing that in the service to the public. It is not because of you. It is not because of your own private interests. And that's the ethics point, Gene, that you're making so very, very well. You bring to that responsibility given to you a sense of honor and pride, but also deference to ethics and decency in executing your all-important decisions. And if you don't do that, you need to leave. You need to resign. You need to be thrown out by the next election, if not before, because you've forgotten what that basic commandment of public service is. If you look at the Constitution, which we chat about all the time, we'll talk about it again in just a moment or so, that's what it is all about. And as we go forward, that notion of public service implicit in the Constitution, also a part of our appointed Supreme Court members, our elected Supreme Court justices in our Wisconsin Supreme Court, they have the same obligation to do the law, to do the facts, to apply the two of them to each other, and to ensure that justice is done, not because of their own political or partisan views, but because of the fact that it is right to do it. That's the ethics, Gene, that you're talking about, that we always embrace. We're going to chat more as we spend much of June and perhaps even into July talking about the Supreme Court cases and chatting about the intersection of ethics, not only identified by the many, many problems identified with Clarence Thomas, his wife, Harlan Crowe, his personal friend who has some strong connection to him, not only personally, but also had a case before the Supreme Court. All those kinds of things implicating ethics and the confidence that Americans can and should have in their Supreme Court, that it will decide those cases impartially and doing it in a way that does not reflect on their own personal interests. That's the ethics that we've got to ensure. And Gene, I think your comment applies not only to the Supreme Court, but to everyone else, right? We've talked a lot about Congress today as well. Previous caller talking about this hearing before the House of Representatives this past week. Has to be pursued with integrity, right? Rules applied uniformly and appropriately, equitably for everybody. There is a sense of due process, of equal protection, that it should attend everything. Why? Because our Constitution says so. And beyond that, because it is right and decent to do it. We are a country of human beings. We're a country of people who regard the importance of each other as being our primary focus. And that those principles that we incorporate into the Supreme Court decisions and in our constitutions are embodiments of that. And so that leads me to my last comment this good morning, about the 14th Amendment that encapsulates, along with many other provisions of the Constitution, this notion of equal protection. And you have heard recently the implication that maybe the president should invoke the 14th Amendment to overcome this stalemate, perhaps still going on as late as this morning, about raising the debt ceiling. And we're not going to chat this morning about the pros and cons of that. I would offer to you that this is not a difficult question. It has to be done to ensure the legitimacy of our economic stability. That's the president's position. That's the position of most reasonable, rational people. I would once again offer, as a previous caller indicated, on both sides of the political aisle. What is this issue about the 14th Amendment? 14th Amendment, again, says this, and a very infrequently invoked portion of it. It is buried deep in a late section of the 14th Amendment, says this: the validity of the public debt of the United States authorized by law shall not be questioned. Ratified on July 9th of 1868. Debt of the United States shall not be questioned. People saying that that's the basis upon which the president can and should invoke that and simply direct Janet Yellen to pay our bills in excess of the debt ceiling. Probably not a wise thing to do. Certainly would be challenged in Congress, but that's the language in the 14th Amendment they're talking about, even as late as this morning, this Civil War amendment enacted by our Congress, approved, ratified in 1868. We'll be talking more about the debt ceiling, the intersection of that and the Constitution, what happens in that area of our lifelong practice here in the United States of America, legislation, judicial actions, executive actions, on future segments of this broadcast. Join us for those next Saturday and the Saturdays to come. Join me for those discussions and our future deliberations on what it means to be America and what it means. Join us for those next.
My name is Teresa Barber. I was in the United States Navy, and I served overseas in the Middle East and Africa. Early on in my career, I had a commander that taught our suicide prevention training, and the very next day, he took his own life. 90% of suicide attempts involving a gun are fatal. My way of continuing my service is to help protect my community by being a responsible gun owner and by storing firearms safely. Store all your guns securely. Help stop suicide.
Brought to you by End Family Fire and the Ad Council.
You were supposed to get a colon cancer screening, but stuff came up.
We did have to pick up the twins from practice.
But on the way, we hit a giant pothole. Over on.
If you are 45 and older, don't let but stuff get in the way of your screening. Visit the Colorectal Cancer Alliance at ccalliance.org.
But then...
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay.
WGBW 1590 AM Denmark. W250 CV Green Bay.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
Hi, we're the Goo Goo Dolls. We're fortunate.
ABC News.